linoleum knife.
A podcast of the cinema.
There's a baguette on top of the CD player.
And other stories.
Many of you are aware that this lo-fi podcast that comes from a dining room table.
Yes.
Has its music pumped out live from a CD player that sits on top of the table. Currently, there's a real baguette sitting on top of it.
So if you noticed any fluctuation in your audio quality, perhaps...
If it had a sourdough finish to it.
It seemed crusty.
Yeah.
Because there was a baguette.
Crusty on the outside and just fluffy on the inside. Oh, very, very good baguette.
Nice baguette.
Very yes. good baguette.
Yes. Kudos.
From lovely little shop, Monsieur Marcel, here in Los Angeles.
Yes. Welcome.
We like good bread.
We do. We love bread.
I'm terrible at making it, so.
That's not true.
It is true.
No. Like so many Americans, you tackled the no-need bread during the, you know.
I had done it before.
Worst of the pandemic.
I had done it before the pandemic and wasn't even good at it then. But at the beginning of the pandemic, when there was no bread on shelves
to be had,
I thought, well, I guess I'm going to try again.
Your no-need bread was often quite tasty.
Sure.
It wasn't always perfect.
Sure.
And I think if you...
If I did it every day, if I became a bread baking...
every day.
Committed bread baker.
But if you committed to it the way you did so many other things...
Cakes.
...that you were baking during this, I think you'd...
Now you know what I really like the most. Do I want bread at breakfast time or do I want cake?
Let me eat cake, he said.
I got real good at cake.
Okay.
I did not stay good at bread.
This is not our food podcast.
It should be. Happy Cheez-It-tennial, everyone.
It's our film podcast hosted by you, Dave White, me, Alonzo Duraldi. We both write for The Wrap. We host this show and have done so for quite some time now, and we're husbands.
But it is also the Cheez-It-tennial.
It is the Cheez-It-tennial.
100 years of Cheez-Its.
I worry that the Cheez-It-tennial is going to get all commercial. That we're going to miss the real spirit.
That was such a bad joke. I don't even have a response to it.
Of the Cheez-It-tennial.
Would you like to begin talking? We have two movies to talk about today.
That's it?
Two.
That can't be right.
I think it's right.
No, I'm calling shenanigans on this.
I don't think I'm wrong here. We've got the Black Widow.
Uh-huh.
We've got the No Sudden Move.
Right.
Yeah, that's the one. Those are two. We got two. Two.
Well, that's just ridiculous.
Two films.
Did you, well, today. You, hang on. You watched, I Carry You With Me, did you not?
I have not yet done that.
You haven't?
I have still not yet done that.
Oh, okay. Well, we will circle back to
that. I bumped up to No Sudden Move.
Okay, fine.
But we're going to circle back to I Carry You With Me.
Okay.
It's still in theaters.
Yes.
And we'll soon stream.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then. Yeah, okay. We have two movies, then.
Two is enough. Listen, one is enough.
Nothing.
As we all learned.
Sure. When Mamma Mia 2 came out.
Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, came out.
Or The Boys in the Band, or...
Did we just do one episode about The Boys in the Band?
We did.
That was for LKTV.
No, we did one episode of this show, and we talked about the remake and the original, and that was the entire episode.
All right. Okay.
I guess you're right. I forget. When a Marvel movie opens, nothing wants to go up against it. Okay.
And a Marvel movie opened.
Yes. We haven't watched the Fear Street movies yet, which I'm sure we'll circle back to at some point.
Maybe. We might.
We might.
I'm pretty busy.
Are you?
I am.
Well.
I was going to say I'm fixing to watch an 8-hour movie, but I'm not going to go sit down and a theater chair for
do it in one go
for that thing. there's an 8-hour film that's fixing to come out. They're gonna do it like 2 days here at the Lumiere at the music hall. But as much as I love the Lumiere, and will sit through a film there, that film better be about an hour and 45 minutes max, because those chairs are quite old.
Yes,
and they're not great. And they're going to have people, true iron people.
Right.
Who are going to sit through an 8-hour movie.
Your back also old and not great.
My back is also terrible, which is why last week I hit y'all with a teaser about going to physical therapy.
Yeah.
I went to physical therapy.
You did.
Turned out my back and legs are all screwed up. And
now you're being proactive.
I guess they'll get better. I'm going to, you know, try to fix them.
All right. I have faith in you.
My physical therapist is really nice.
Well, good.
Very calm. Very patient. Very helpful. He saw my enthusiasm. He said, "You seem enthusiastic." I don't want you to overdo these moves I've got for you.
Did you make him tell you that you were the best of all physical therapies?
Well,
that you were doing it right and better.
You know, he doesn't know that yet because it was just the first visit.
Does he know that you have to win at physical therapy?
He's going to find out.
Oh, okay. I pity this man.
No, but I'm obeying his advice. I didn't do anything today because I screwed up something in the leg liftings yesterday.
Ouch.
And pulled something in the back of my, like on the backside of my knee. There's something that feels like a knot back there now. And I don't want to, he said, don't overdo it.
Okay.
So I don't want to make whatever that is worse.
But you're just doing regular stretchings.
Today I gave myself the day off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Which I think is the right move.
It's a holiday today.
And I'm writing down everything that I'm doing, all my reps and my sets. That's what they're called.
I know, but it's just funny when you say it.
I'm a workout king now. You watch.
Bruh, can I spot you?
I'm gonna be prancing about like Florence Pugh in Black Widow.
Well, it's good to have goals.
By the way, the 8-hour movie that's fixing to open is called The Works and Days of Tayoko Shiojiri in the Shiotani Basin.
Uh-huh. Who's releasing this? Is it Grasshopper?
I think it's Grasshopper.
Is it Cinema Guild?
It's either Grasshopper or Cinema Guild. I think it's Grasshopper. And eventually it'll stream or be on a DVD, and then I'll finally get to watch it on a comfortable couch.
And, you know, Criterion just put out The Human Condition.
Mm-hmm. Also 8-ish hours long. Classic film that I've never seen.
Me neither.
So I'm very excited to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
Although they didn't send you one for your column.
No.
How dare they?
Well, you know, they're very nice to me. I can't have everything.
You're right. They are very nice to you.
So speaking of Florence Pugh, you just moments before we
20
started,
minutes ago finished watching.
Got done watching Black Widow.
Black Widow.
And you did not know where it fell in the chronology.
No, I had no idea. Listen, I know the Black Widow. Let me back up a bit. Now I know that Black Widow died at the end of whatever the last
Endgame
movie was. Endgame.
Avengers Endgame.
And I saw Endgame and talked about it with you here on this podcast.
Yes.
But, like, let's remind the audience of my relationship with Marvel movies.
Right.
They're fun.
They're like my relationship with Star Wars. Unless you are actively watching one, you are not thinking about them.
That's right. I don't spend any time between the end of one of them and the beginning of the next one thinking about them.
Yes.
What will happen during the week after seeing one, I will come to you with various questions.
Yes.
So what does that thing mean?
Yes.
That object in the film, what's that do?
Right.
What does this little red powder do in Black Widow? Why do they have that? Stuff like that.
Sure.
What are these stones? Explain them to me again. When they blipped people and they came back.
Yes.
Can they get re-blipped?
No, the blip was a one-time thing.
Also, who died at the end of Endgame? Forever died.
Black Widow.
Black Widow.
Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Captain America ish.
Okay.
So he's off the timeline. Let's just say.
The point is that I forgot all of that.
Okay.
To me, in my heart, they're all still alive.
Okay.
Avenging whatever.
Right.
So when this movie started, I thought, okay, well, now we're back with the Black Widow, and she's going to do some stuff. She's going to get some bad guys. She's going to hang out with Florence Pugh, Rachel Weisz, David Harbour. They're like a family. Like, they're the family you never knew about that was, I guess, always around.
Yeah, somebody made the joke that...
Like Dominic Toretto's brother in Fast Nine. Like, oh, he was always there. You just never knew
him. Somebody made the joke that 8 movies in, we find out that these two characters have siblings.
Right. So, I just thought that was what was going to happen. I mean, I saw the trailer once, and David Harbour was like, family, we're back together again, you know. And I didn't remember that she had died. I just thought this was the next chapter.
Nope.
Well, now I know.
Yes.
I learned about this after I watched the entire film. Didn't affect my enjoyment one bit.
Nor should it. I think this is one of those ones for people that don't really pay attention and they just want to see a movie that is a self-contained thing. This is a self-contained thing.
Each time a new Marvel movie comes out, I get a little prep from you. I say, what has happened up to this point? Please remind me. Because I cannot be expected to carry all of this information around in my memory.
Well, and you did not ask me this time. So
no.
That might be a problem.
Because I also, here's the other thing, do not care at all. These films are what apparently all films are to most people. Something to occupy my visual field for a couple of hours. And when it's over, I forget what it was. I forget the title. I forget who was in it. I become your mom. And I say, that one with that girl in it, you know, the one I like.
And the truck explodes.
Yeah. The Marvel movies are to me that. They are... actually nothing.
They are
strictly entertainment products that I enjoy looking at. I don't want anyone to think that I don't like these films.
Right.
I totally enjoy myself with these films. They are, for me, a pure kind of entertainment in that when they say goodbye, I say goodbye. And we never think about each other again.
It's like peekaboo.
Kind of like peekaboo. Kind of like a hookup with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Did that happen? You run into them in the supermarket.
Right.
5 years later and they look vaguely familiar. And then you're like, oh, yes, we had sex that time.
Marvel movies are like that. A magical moment that ends.
It ends and then it's done.
Yes.
And then the next thought on your head is the Ben and Jerry's outside of the Burbank 16 open right now at this hour? I would like some chocolate fudge brownie, 2 scoops on a sugar cone. And by the time I finish
that is a hell of a metaphor.
By the time I finish that ice cream, I think, I guess I just saw a movie and I had a good time. Now I'm going to go home and go to bed. It's 3:00 in the afternoon. In this Black Widow movie,
yes,
we begin with Little Black Widow and Little Sister Black Widow.
Yes.
And they're playing outside. And then Mommy Black Widow and Daddy Black Widow come in and say, hey, guess what? We're going to take it on the lam. Get in the car. Vroom, off they go. And then they're flying a plane. And then they get to a place.
Cuba.
And Russian soldiers attack everybody and pull everybody apart. And they take the 2 little girls and they turn them into...
super spies.
Super soldier, Black Widow, combat people. In honestly, a montage sequence that felt like something out of the Zack Snyder, Dawn of the Dead. Just terrifying imagery.
Oh, yeah.
Of, like, little girls being, like, sent through some sort of slaughter machine or whatever. Like, the
boot camp.
Like a boot camp, yeah. Fast forward to the future. Natasha is her name.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
She's on the run from William Hurt. I always forget why. I always forget why William Hurt is chasing people in these films. But he is, and that's okay.
You know, I don't remember the actual mechanics of the Civil War myself. I just know that, like, Captain America was on the run, Black Widow was on the run,
was on the run,
and a few more of them were on the run.
She winds up reconnecting with her younger sister, played by Florence Pugh.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, played by Rachel Weisz. Her father, played by David Harbour. Here's the catch. None of them are her actual family.
Correct.
They were all...
spies.
Assigned, right? So the two parents who were not their parents, who were never married, but who were into each other. and, I mean, who can blame them?
Well, sure.
Really. It's like, no matter what you're into, Rachel Weisz and David Harbour... pretty good specimens. And they learn that, you know, the two young ones learn that, oh, no, these were never our parents.
Right.
We actually aren't even related to each other as sisters.
Yeah.
And now we're very angry about this. The only one who's into it still as the family idea is Dad Black Widow.
Yes.
Because he's an idiot.
Right.
And
he was himself a kind of a Soviet superhero.
Yes.
He was the Red Guardian.
Yeah. Do they say that name?
They say the name Red Guardian, yes. He brings it up a few
times.
Like
one time?
A couple times. And then at one point, to annoy him, Florence Pugh refers to him as the Crimson Dynamo.
Oh, that's right.
Who is a whole other Marvel character.
Oh, that's an actual Marvel
character? Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Back when they introduced Black Widow in the 60s, she fought alongside this sort of like the Soviet Iron Man.
The Crimson Dynamo. I thought that was a made-up name.
Nope.
Okay. Anyway, there is a really wonderful dialogue exchange that I'm not going to tell you about that takes place between David Harbour and Florence Pugh.
Yes.
And Scarlett Johansson. I learned today that bit of dialogue was written by one of my favorite filmmakers, Nicole Holofcener.
Yes.
Who I guess took a pass at this script and added some human elements to it.
I guess so.
We'll come back to talking about in just a second.
Get that Marvel check, Nicole Holofcener.
Yeah. And then they have to go fight the bad guy and thwart the army of, like, a million other Black Widows that...
who are under mind control.
And the bad guy is Ray Winston.
Yes.
And, you know, come on. If you've seen Sexy Beast, then you know.
This is a film of women in cat suits and thick gentlemen.
A.K.A. the perfect film. So, then there's some fighting. Good fighting.
Very good fighting, I think.
Very exciting fighting.
A little too much editing, but...
sure, there always is.
Yeah.
But I tend to space out during the action sequences where people are just hurling through space and crashing into stuff.
Sure.
But I did not this time. I thought the action sequences were more understandable than they frequently are.
Really? Even in a Marvel movie?
Even by Marvel movie standards of incomprehensibility.
Well, see, I don't find Marvel action scenes incomprehensible the
usually
way I do.
Usually they are to me.
The way I do, say, a Michael Bay action scene.
I understand. They're classes.
Right.
Yes. There are differences.
Absolutely. Yeah. What can bug me about them and what sometimes bug me about them here is the thing that I think is generally a problem with movies now where they either don't want to let a full range of motion take place, or right. they haven't rehearsed enough to yeah. get a full range of motion in one shot they can use. So it's like cut, you know, like arm moves and then cut to a different angle of somebody's face and then cut to this and cut right. to that. And it even though it's exciting, it still sort of ultimately diminishes the feeling of hand-to-hand combat is taking place here.
So anyway, those aren't really what keeps you going.
Not really.
Through this film anyway. Ultimately, this is a family drama.
Mm.
Sometimes family comedy. About people who have to decide what they want to be to each other.
Right.
They have history. They have, you know, resentments like any family would. But these are extreme circumstances sure. that these four people have been in. And so each one has to, well, Harbor doesn't have to figure out anything because, again, he's an idiot.
Yes. They basically have to decide.
The women have to decide what they want to be to each other.
Right. And yeah. if the premise by which their family existed undermines the genuine sort of emotional, you know, back history that they all have.
And they lock that down in the first 10 minutes of the film
yeah.
really effectively.
Yes.
So you know, because you've seen it, you know what they can be.
Yes.
And, you know, the film is, can we get back to that in some new
right.
way?
Were we faking it then? If it meant something, can we right. can we be that? Yeah.
So on that level, it's a real movie.
Yeah. And it's not so much a Black Widow origin story because
no.
we mostly got that in other right. films, like yeah. here and there, you know, over the course of these movies. It really kind of winds up being, my joke was that it's like the season 5 finale of the Black Widow show, where Scarlett Johansson is leaving the series, but she's introducing you to these new characters that she's sure you'll love and you'll tune in for them, you know?
Right.
She's kind of passing the baton to Florence Pugh, but also sort of inveigling Rachel Weisz and David Harbour into this ongoing mega storyline that is the MCU.
Yeah.
So that even though she's going to peace out, like she's going to keep this part of it going. And
we don't even know how much she's going to be out.
True. I
we
mean,
have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, this movie happened after her character died. So anything's up for grabs, I guess.
Are people calling this an origin story? Because it has elements of that, but it's not.
Not particularly, no. But I think,
really
usually when a character gets a solo outing.
A standalone film.
Yeah, then yeah. that's, like, you know, Ant-Man, for instance, you know. But in this case, yeah, it's more just, it's a prequel that falls, you know,
yeah.
earlier in the series.
I think this film works for anybody who is not, you know, already dug in their heels about never watching any of these
sure.
kinds of movies. And I know some people.
Oh, yeah.
Who steadfastly refuse to participate in any of it.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I had not been a working film critic at the time these started rolling,
uh-huh.
I might not be there for them either. Like, I would just think to myself, I don't know, just, you know. Especially if I could have seen into the future and know and known what sort of overreach this world would have on the, you know,
culture in general.
On the culture. I don't approve of the domination of this stuff. This stuff and the DC stuff and...
But is it the stuff's fault or is it the audience's fault?
It's the studio's fault. The studio's at fault. Because every once in a while, a film like this is a welcome diversion.
Yeah.
Let's say every 3 summers, we get one.
Uh-huh.
Instead of 5 a year.
Well.
And my burnout level... this film did not affect it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we had a year off.
We had a full year away from all of it.
Yeah.
And I, during the pandemic, knowing that this stuff was all on hold, I remember thinking, when it's your job to participate in this, to have ideas about it, to have, you know, thoughts on why it exists in the world, you can get overwhelmed, which is why I've not really watched any of the shows that Disney Plus is now rolling out.
And the way that this works out, there's a bump after the credits.
Of Black Widow.
Of Black Widow. Yes. But if you have not been watching the Disney Plus shows, you're going to be like, what?
Why? Why
Who?
Is that? Who, why is
How?
This person here?
Yeah.
Why are they talking to her? What's going to happen next?
Right.
And again, I don't care. Early on when they started, Captain America, Winter Soldier, you know, the first Avengers, you could very easily just draw the line from 9/11 to these films.
Sure.
That's not so easy anymore, because they aren't really here to reflect anything about actual human existence as global events are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, as I said, this is a family drama.
Yeah.
So this does reflect a form of actual human, you know, experience. But at this point, they are exactly what Martin Scorsese said they are. They are audiovisual entertainments. That is all they are. And we aren't, I don't think we can be expected to ask for them to reflect anything about ourselves at all. They haven't been, really.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly enough, like Wonder Woman 1984 feels like it was more a response to the zeitgeist.
Yes.
Then, yeah, these movies do sort of exist in their own kind of vacuum of things, and they aren't necessarily looking to reflect current events or much. Really.
Wonder Woman 84 is a movie about Trump.
Yes.
But not much. I mean, none of the rest of this stuff at this point, as it's, you know, sprawled and grown a million tentacles and,
yeah,
you know, crossovers and you know, connections to each other. It's its own little contained thing, and it's independent of human,
well,
feeling.
That might be putting too fine a point on it. I think so. People made the observation that, and obviously WandaVision wasn't planned this way because it was written and shot well before the pandemic happened. But because it is about a woman dealing with loss and trauma and sort of using comfortable old television shows as a place of comfort,
right,
I think a lot of people sort of looked at that and thought, I can relate to this. This means something to me.
Okay.
So I don't think they're so divorced.
I'm talking about the films.
I understand that.
You're talking about television programs that I have not watched.
Okay.
All right.
What I'm saying is, I don't think they're necessarily entirely divorced from humanity. I think you are getting characters in these movies, and you are getting some elements of human behavior. But yes, overall, they are big and flashy and fun, and you know, the fact.
Okay, that, I'm giving into your opinion here.
The fact that they make so many of them. I mean, you're right. It's not like
you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's not like when, you know, how many years did it take MGM to make like 8 Andy Hardy movies? Like 3 or 4?
I don't know.
Like those came out pretty quickly.
Right.
But then again, that was in the pre-television era when a lot of, you know, like the Blondie series were basically a sitcom.
People were going to the movies 3 and 4 times a week.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to do 2-3 of these movies a year. It's just sort of like, well, we can, and you'll come, so.
I guess what I'm reacting to now that we're back on this treadmill again.
Yes.
And I'm going to have to keep asking you questions about, well, what happened on the effing show
right
that was on Disney Plus that I have to now know about, even though I don't care to know about it if I'm going to understand the film that we're going to go see. I
have to tell you about WandaVision when we see the next Doctor Strange movie.
Here's what this
movie,
is. I resent being pushed around. I resent being pushed around. I resent being told, see it now. Now you're going to see it. And we're going to have another one in a few months. And you're going to do that too. I resent that.
Do you resent it when every couple of years we get a new Fast and the Furious movie and you're expected to remember the 15 characters?
Oh, here's the thing about that.
Yeah.
Number one, often I don't remember the other characters. Okay. I have to be reminded of their names or who they are and what they're
Why
doing.
Why is Bow Wow here again?
Yeah, exactly. I, when Bow Wow showed up in F9, I was like, oh, wait, yeah, you were in one of the other ones. What is it? What is it you do again? You know, yeah. Or your character.
Yeah.
You know. I know what Bow Wow does.
He's an entertainer.
He's an entertainer. I am beginning to resent the F9 series too.
Oh wow.
Yeah. The more I get away from this last one, the more hollow it feels to me.
Mm,
and there was that sweet spot, you know,
five, six, seven.
Yeah. Where I was starting to get invested in the characters' lives.
Yes.
And it really, you know, started to mean something to me.
Giselle.
And then they went to space. And they're probably going to go to Jurassic Park somewhere down the road, you know? I'm starting to feel less and less. And this, again, I've said this before, this may be pandemic fatigue talking, but these large industrial entertainments they're not for me to care about for longer than their duration. I have other films that mean more to me that I want to occupy. I want my thought processes to be, you know, centered on something else.
Sure. And this has been mentioned in other, you know, quarters, but I think there's certainly this notion of, like, movie theaters are now going to be for the big audiovisual entertainments, and that everything else we stream. You know,
I tell you what my DVD pick of the week is then?
Oh, okay.
It's a film we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1950 movie called In a Lonely Place.
Oh.
We've discussed it on this show before. You and I watched it one night on TCM mm-hmm. in the past couple years. And it was the first time either one of us had seen it, I think. And
I think I had seen it at the TCM Film Festival before that. But
well, I finally got to see it last week on a big screen at a movie theater at the New Art here in Los Angeles. And that experience is really important. Go ahead and watch it on, you know, DVD or watch it on Turner Classic Movies. But maybe someday you'll get to go to a repertory theater and watch it there too. Because it's a great movie about people with really difficult, complex lives, you know, involved in a murder investigation. It's a genre film as well. It's a noir. But it's about people with lives.
Right.
And that is what I'm missing. Again, not Black Widow, because we've just described, you know, what's valuable about it. But that's what's missing from so much of this stuff that's out there now. Stuff they were sitting on all 2020, stuff they were showing before 2020, stuff we're fixing to get in theaters for the rest of the year and beyond. How many of these Marvel movies are coming? What do they got in the can ready to go?
Well, the next one is The Eternals, which is the Chloe Zhao one.
And when's that?
I think it's before the end of the year.
Christmas this year?
I think. I'm not sure.
And I'm sucked in already because I want to see what Chloe Zhao does with a Marvel movie.
Of course.
Maybe my opinion will change.
Maybe.
But as of right now, in spite of the fact that I just enjoyed what I saw,
mm-hmm.
I think film should mean more than just entertainment.
Of course.
You should be able to carry it around with you after, instead of, you know, leaving it behind.
Right. Paul Verhoeven has made a movie about lesbian nuns.
I know.
For you.
Are there vampires in it like Karen Tonkson just
I don't think so.
Mentioned. Okay.
Sadly. He let that one slip by somehow.
All right. Let's move on.
Yes, and before we get...
Black Widow. Good.
Yes.
I will not remember it tomorrow.
Before we get on to No Sudden Move, this episode of Linoleum Knife is brought to you by AmberPetty.com.
Amber Petty, I don't know if you knew this, is also a super soldier.
No way.
Of writing.
Oh! You got me. Always with the zag when I think you're going
to
zig.
You know what's not fun? Googling how to start writing and getting 10,000 articles with conflicting advice, like the Delta variant.
For instance.
You know what is fun? Amber Petty's free start writing session. In 60 minutes, you will get details on how to start writing, and most importantly, you will start writing in class. If the artist's way is collecting dust on your shelf, this workshop is a wonderful way to find out where to pitch your stories, learn what editors are looking for, and get inspired to keep writing. Did I just mangle the word editor? Did I say editor?
Editor.
Editor. And it's free.
It is.
The last workshops are this week. Find the page. Sorry, find the date. I just misread that. Find the date that works for you and sign up for free at amberpetty.com/linoleum.
And that link will be in the
show. If you think you want to start writing, this woman's going to help you get paid. Mm-hmm. That's really, if I wrote the copy for this, I'm like, do you want money? Do you want to write and get money? Amber Petty will do this with you.
AmberPetty.com.
And it's free.
/linoleum.
It's actually free.
It is.
Unlike Black Widow on Disney Plus, which cost $30.
Yes.
I could have gone to see it in a movie theater, but my back and legs were not having it.
What if you'd gone to like a recliner?
What are you talking about?
You know, the AMCs now with the schmancy, the buttons.
But you don't know which one is the reclining seat until you get into the theater.
Oh, yeah, you do. Because it's always, well, if it's at like Century City, it's the most expensive one.
Oh, so almost $30 then. I could have, why don't I just stay home? Yeah.
Point taken.
Yeah.
And then on HBO Max, which we get with our cable subscription because we're old and we like having cable.
No Sudden Move, the new Steven Soderbergh film.
Yes.
Is it in theaters too?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And I'm not a giant partisan about where you see something. This one, I think, maybe see in theaters, but we'll get to why. So it's set in the 50s.
I'm going to disagree with you, but when we talk about why, we'll have that conversation. Right. Yeah.
It's set in the 50s in Detroit. And Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro are a couple of small-time hoods.
Yep.
They are hired by Brendan Fraser, who's looking very glowery, to basically babysit the family of, ta-da, David Harbour. It's David Harbour week.
It is David Harbour week.
To watch over his wife and children in their Detroit home while other people take David Harbour to his office at one of the big three car companies.
That was a paper towel being ripped that was not farting, by the way, just letting y'all know. Go on.
Sure, Jan.
All right.
To get something out of his safe. Things do not go as planned, as one might expect, because it's a noirish crime movie.
Yeah.
It is, because it's a Steven Soderbergh movie, like really period specific, very entertaining. Ed Solomon's script, I think, does some of the best exposition that isn't exposition I've ever heard in a movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's almost telling you the whole story out of order in a way. It's amazing what they do with that.
And it becomes demanding.
Yes.
To follow
all the pieces.
Who's zooming who?
Yeah.
Here. And why they're doing it.
Yes. and not simply
incredibly
in a,
detailed, and you need to pay attention.
Not simply in a who's lying and why, but like there's backstories and there's, you know,
backstories, betrayals, reversals,
secret rivalries,
all kinds of stuff going on.
Exactly. So that's all laid on thickly and in a great way. Here's where this movie loses me.
All right.
It does not announce itself as a movie that's about things until pretty late in the game, by my taste.
Okay.
To me, it feels like sort of crime, caper. Oh, and also, you know, like big business and systemic racism. And it's like, is that where this movie is? That's what this movie's about? Like, you could have hinted at that earlier, maybe. Not everybody agrees with me. Christy did not agree with me.
I think the details are all there, giving you what it wants to give you from start to finish. You learn within the first 5 to 10 minutes that you'd better be noticing what people are doing and what they're saying, what they're talking about, what the subject is. That this is not just intrigue in the automobile industry. This is about the way American life got rigged. How it started before these characters ever showed up, and how they aided and abetted, and then at the end when they tell you what the future holds.
Yeah, by the time the movie gets to the title cards telling you, like, the subsequent things that occur, I was like, okay, I did not get any of that from this plot.
Well, why?
Are you telling me it's all in there?
It's in there.
Okay.
It's in there.
Then maybe I am dumb. Because
you are not.
I feel like this was a movie that was just criming its way along, and then all of a sudden it was about these giant issues, and I just thought that
I'm going to give you this.
Where's the runway?
I'm going to give you this. There is subtlety to this detail, and because of it, I think it. What if you watched it again?
Maybe.
I would watch it again. I would go see it maybe in a movie theater, although I might be afraid to go see it in a movie theater.
See, okay, that's the thing I want to talk about also. Yeah. I saw it projected.
Uh-huh.
And there is so much fisheye lens in this movie.
Oh, it's not, yeah.
So much.
That's not the problem.
That Soderbergh's...
The fisheye lens is not the problem.
Oh, well, see, that's what I was talking about.
It's that glide of the fisheye lens.
Yes.
When you're a kid and you go on the Tilt-A-Whirl at the carnival... And it just zooms you around, and you go, like, push to the edge of the limit, and then it spins you and pulls you back, and you start to feel like you're going to throw up. I have a fear that if I saw this movie in a theater and was not sitting on the very back row...
It would Cloverfield you?
I would become motion sick.
Wow, okay.
Because the camera... This is not a problem. This is a feature of the film.
Sure.
The cinematography of this movie...
By Soderbergh.
Glides you along as though you are in an old cruising automobile.
Yes.
But what it's really doing is taking you around a lot of curves. Mm. And anyone who's ever ridden in the back seat of a car driving around Mulholland Drive in Los Angeles knows you might feel like you're going to throw up. So watching it on HBO Max helped me manage it visually.
Okay.
Because he just swoops in. Anytime there's any kind of human difficulty going on screen, the camera starts flinging you around. And I thought, oh, Steven Soderbergh, I understand the visual storytelling you're doing right now, but I'm going to be nauseated.
I sat in the back row of the screening room, not knowing this was going to be happening. I just like to sit in the back row.
Yeah.
And I was like, woo. And then I thought... Well, A, they made us... I reviewed it for when it was in Tribeca. They made critics see it projected. They wouldn't send us links. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, well, now I see why. And, oh, man, this is going to be on HBO Max. I can't imagine watching this at home. But I hear what you're saying.
Knowing what I know, I would go, but I would need a very specific theater configuration, and I would need to be on the back row.
Gotcha.
Because it is... If you are subject to motion sickness at all from watching things, this could do it to you. So watching it on HBO Max is a it's a good option for y'all.
Fair enough.
If you're like me. Let me talk about all the other stuff, though. Mm-hmm. All the performances are great.
Yes.
All the interlocking people and places and events and activities and, you know, all the stuff we talked about before. It feels like a precision machine.
Yes.
That I am involved in.
And see, I followed all that.
And that's, yeah. I think that the stuff that was meant to be subtextual that you were given sort of like, you know, comments here and there about this and that, and mm-hmm. you're supposed to sort of connect the dots yourself. Again, like you said, subtle stuff. The period design is chef's kiss.
Mm.
Everything looks amazing.
Yeah.
The production design of this film is so enveloping and beautiful.
And it's a movie that goes everywhere from like seedy neighborhoods to sort of mansions and oak-lined boardroom. So it's not just this uniform like 50s. It's everything's very specific.
There are all kinds of little nods to other stuff. You know, you don't put Ray Liotta in the trunk of a car. Unless you're, you know, thinking of a film that he was in before. When
sure.
He, you know. You don't cast John Hamm as, you know, a guy in a suit in that era without automatically associating him with his other work.
Right.
I've
said this before.
It's not just dudes.
Amy Simons and Noah Jupe are cast as mother and son, and they look like mother and son. And I'm a huge fan of both of them as actors, so it's exciting to see them together.
The women in the film, because it is a period film and they have, you know, patriarchy-designed roles to play in that era, as characters, they all bring, you know, momentum to the story. They aren't just passive wives or girlfriends or whoever else. So I think this is really good. Now, I did not see The Laundromat, which I heard was pretty bad. But I feel like I should, because, you know, this and Laundromat and High Flying Bird and other films that are about one thing but really about another thing.
Right.
He's doing this, and he keeps doing this.
No, go ahead.
And he has a way of telling stories that is not clanging you over the head with his point.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, didactic. Maybe we want them to be a little more didactic.
No, I felt that was the problem with this one. Like, for example, I think High Flying Bird sneaks up on you with what it has to say about labor and management, and it builds it along the way.
Yeah.
This movie, I felt like, wasn't building to the big points that it was making at the end. Maybe I am an idiot and just didn't catch that, but I felt like I was paying a lot of attention. I was getting all the very finessed, subtle character interactions and backstory and exposition for the film.
Right.
But then when it came time to like unpack the big issues, it felt like those trunks just dropped out of the sky.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe he erred on the side of too much subtlety. I don't know. Right. I didn't feel like he did.
All right. But no, he definitely has been, certainly since coming back from his retirement, but in general...
There was never any retirement.
No.
He went off and made the Nick. He didn't take a week off. That never happened. He changed his mind the moment he said it.
But, you know, you look at movies like this and High Flying Bird, Logan Lucky, and, you know, Magic Mike even. Like, these are movies that are about the economy, but that are couched in other...
Okay, let's talk about Magic Mike for a second. Remember when Magic Mike came out and people were like, what was that?
Well, because...
Why? What was that even supposed to be?
Magic Mike was advertised like it was a night in heaven.
Okay.
And it was actually a movie about economic distress.
Right. And a lot of people who wrote reviews of that film missed that.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm missing what this movie is building up to. I know what this movie is about because it very clearly tells you in the last 20 minutes what it's about.
In the last, like...
10.
Yeah.
But my issue is like, how did we get here from that?
Right, right.
And if I missed it, then I missed it.
But what did I tell you not to be?
But even if even if it gets that part wrong, which I still think it does,
right,
there are so many other pleasures, which you've mentioned here, that make it worth looking at.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're pukey by nature, maybe watch it on HBO Max.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he just really, man.
It is. I felt
like I was being swooped around.
It's like, imagine those sequences of Andre Holland walking down the street in High Flying Bird where Soderbergh's following him from across the street on his iPhone. Only now, like, Andre Holland is in the center of the frame and everything behind him is like
spinning.
A cylinder spinning around. That's what the fisheye in this movie looks like.
So, hey, what's your streaming or DVD pick?
My streaming pick this week is Wattstax, which is out of print on DVD, and I'd say...
Oh, so you're being mean now.
Overdue for a Blu-ray. Well, I'm not recommending the DVD. That's what you would do, and then I'd have to look it up later and go, hey, there isn't one. overdue for a Blu-ray, I would say. This is a very interesting pairing with Summer of Soul. So this is a 1973 concert film of a concert that took place in L.A. in 72. It was meant to commemorate the anniversary of the Watts riots. It featured recording artists from Stax Records, hence the name Wattstax. It took place at the L.A. Coliseum and features, the Staple Singers and Isaac Hayes, a lot of other performers. And it's... It's unusual in that they don't quite do what Summer of Soul does, where it's like, here's the concert, and then here's people talking about, the larger issues. But they kind of do that.
And there's no hindsight in
exactly. It's all happening.
Of the moment,
yeah. So you have this concert footage that is interspersed with, like, interviews of people who live in Watts talking about, like, economic opportunity, but also talking about, falling in love and just sort of different aspects of their lives. One of those people is not yet famous Ted Lang, who would later play Isaac the bartender on the Love Boat.
Right.
So that was kind of like, oh, hey, I know who that is. There is also scenes of Richard Pryor talking, like not on stage, but sort of talking to a table of six or seven people and doing bits and
right.
like doing a routine, doing it like his 15 minutes, whatever. And then also, I guess there were some Stax artists that couldn't be there that day. So then we get footage of them in other places, like one group's in a nightclub, or here's a gospel group in a church. Here's a blues guy, like sitting by a fire, like playing guitar by himself, but like it's a music video because there's, a drum section and horns coming in.
Yeah.
So it's, it kind of jumps around. It doesn't have quite the cohesive power that Summer of Soul has. It's directed by Mel Stewart, who did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, who actually is mainly known as a documentary filmmaker. But it's interesting just to see the difference between 69 and 72.
Yeah.
Like how much change was going on there, if only in terms of like Jesse Jackson's hair in 69 and Jesse Jackson's hair in 72. But also like he does the Nation Time, who I am somebody thing in both films.
Yes.
But in this one, you there's more of a sense of like stuff that was still building up in 69, like the guy talking about, we were suit guys and then we saw Sly Stone. Nobody's a suit guy in 72.
Well, no, not at all. The 70s the 70s were there.
Yes. It's really fascinating. I'd never seen it before. I recommend people check it out.
I just pulled up Ted Lang. He had done one film called Trick Baby.
Oh, okay.
Before appearing as himself in Wattstax. And in 1973... he was in a film called Blade.
Huh.
So he was already a working actor.
Oh, gotcha.
But you just didn't know his name.
Right.
You know.
But in the film, he's just like, it's like man on the street.
Some guy hanging out with his friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good to know. All right, well, listen, thanks for listening, everybody.
You want me to read letters?
Oh, we have letters.
We have two. We have a couple letters. Okay. Daniel says, like Alonzo, I really liked I Carry You With Me. I'm very interested to see what Dave has to say. My partner and I were lucky enough to see it at a Sundance 2020 screening in Salt Lake City with a post-film Q&A with the director. Would you consider a spoiler section of the podcast to discuss the late film development that Alonzo alluded to? Well, why don't we just do that?
What,
next
like
episode?
Next, when you see it.
When
yes.
I see it, yes. And we'll talk about the spoilery stuff, and we'll talk about it...
at the very end.
At the end, yeah.
You got it, mister.
Joe would like to let us know that he has a candle collection.
All right, then.
And this is in reference to...
You had something about like people who are afraid of you in public, and I'm like, and then they see the candle collection. You're like, I don't have a candle collection.
I have, yeah.
You have several candles going at any one time.
Spaced around the apartment so that we...
Collection might be putting too...
Our home is lovely,
putting too fine upon
lovingly fragranced.
Yes. I can't even...
But not in an oppressive way.
No,
Or a gross way.
No, never.
Nice candle.
Clean and fresh.
Dr. Steve says, I would hardly be the first to suggest the big franchises should go small. After saving the world the time or two, whether it's a standalone Wolverine movie or, in a world where Loki exists, would Black Widow have better been served as a limited streaming series?
I think that, I mean, in some ways, yes. And I think a lot of these kind of films benefit from having, you know, they don't have to tell the whole story in 2 hours. They can stretch out a bit. I think that because she was the only one of the Avengers, well, I guess except for Hawkeye, but she was one of the, she was the only like female Avenger and they hadn't done a movie around her yet.
Right.
I think the optics of that was really catching up with Disney Marvel, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like,
I mean,
so far we
should have done it before.
Yeah. So far we've had Captain Marvel and Black Widow, which are female led movies, but taking place out of the MCU sequence.
Yeah.
We're about to get, Marvels or the Marvels or whatever it's called, the next Captain Marvel sequel where there will be several Captain Marvels. So that'll be female led, but it'll be a team movie. So, you know, again, that's the other dodge in this. So it's like, will we ever get a female led solo film that takes place within the, you know, continuity of the
ongoing
MCU?
Timeline rather than a standalone thing that exists in a Tokyo Drift sort of fashion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dunno. But, you know, there are ways in which it would have benefited, but I think people would have really been perturbed about her getting shunted to the small screen rather than getting her moment to shine in a movie.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna do this and give all these different characters their standalone films, she gets one.
Yes. No question.
That's just, you know, like they said in The Legend of Billie Jean, fair is fair.
That's right. We have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/linoleum knife. That's the name of the show. And you go there, it will tell you how much money things cost and what you get when you spend that money.
Yeah.
You're not like supporting something, you're buying something.
That's a
product. We make a product. We make a lot of other podcasts. We, in fact, make 4 other podcasts. And you can get one or all of them.
That's right.
And that's what you do. You go to Linoleum. You go to, where is it again?
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening, you guys. Check out our friends on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to The Schmoes Know, Dennis, Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, The Workroom, God, why is everything flying out of my head right now?
Thought you were going to take them one at a time.
Yeah, days. That's too much work. Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Big Fat Gay Podcast, and Secretly Timid.
Next time, he's going to just talk about one.
Okay, fine, sure. And also, please check out the other shows that I do, namely Maximum Film, Breakfast All Day, and Mondays, I'm on Deck the Hallmark with the fine folks there. Speaking of Deck the Hallmark, what the heck? It's Christmas in July. It's a good time to pre-order I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies,
this
book that I've created with the Deck the Hallmark podcast. It is currently available for pre-order wherever you buy books.
They said all the words, you wrote all the book.
Exactly. So go put your hands on one so you can have it just show up in the mail one day when it's new and fresh, and you'll be very excited that you did. You can subscribe to this podcast for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show. You can also leave positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, Apple Music, CastBox, Podbean, etc. Follow us at LinoleumCast at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Check him out at bandcamp.com/BLEU. And, of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Stay frosty, everybody. We'll see you next time. Until then.
Goodbye.